Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello there, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am the tech editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. As usual, sitting across from me is the man we all know as senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Aloha, y'all.
Aloha.
Well, it makes sense considering what we're going to talk about.
Yes, and we're going to talk about it really fast.
Yeah, well, first let's go into a little listener mail. This listener mail comes from Matt from Boulder, Colorado. And Matt says, hey, guys, I'm a high school science teacher and have been involved in a huge battle for the past couple of years. Throughout the year, I assigned some research projects for my students. Nuclear energy, sources of energy, physics of musical instruments, etc. And when the students go to the computer lab to find information for their projects, the first website they jump to is Wikipedia. No matter how hard I try to drill into their heads that is not a valid source of info, they still use it. Since you guys do lots of research, could you explain to all of your young listeners out there the dangers of Wikipedia? Thanks, Matt.
Well, I think before we get into that, I think what we should do is talk about wikis because, you know, Wikipedia is sort of a love-hate thing with a lot of people, and we'll get into the reasons why, but the wiki itself is a pretty useful tool.
Right, right.
You know, it's essentially what it is it's a wiki.
It's a web page.
Yeah, it's a web page, and actually I kind of think of it as sort of a microcosm of the web.
Yeah.
Because you're creating your own version of the World Wide Web. Every time you create a page on a wiki, you can link it to the other pages on the wiki, and it could be on anything and everything.
Well, tell you what, I got a great idea.
Okay.
I'm just going to take you right over here. Okay. Right? You see where I'm leading you? Right to the machine over here?
Uh-huh.
Get into the Wayback.
Okay.
There you go. All right, I'm done. I'll get in. All right, I'm setting this for 1995, and we're going to travel through time and space. Because we're going to Hawaii. Oh, man. Smell that fresh air. Not like Atlanta at all. Cold, cold Atlanta. And now we're in Hawaii.
And it's great because, you know, as soon as you step out of the time machine. They're waiting there with, you know, decorative lays.
And the coconut drinks.
Oh, yeah,
and the grass
nice.
Skirts and the sea turtles and the spam and the poi. And...
Pardon me, I need to get a big rock and break the time machine.
Yeah, I don't want to go back either. All right, but the reason why I brought you here was to point out... There's one. See the bus over there?
Uh-huh.
You see what the name is on that bus?
It's hard to make out from here.
It says Wiki.
Oh, well, yeah, I saw that part.
W-I-K-I. It means...
It was going fast.
It's an expression for quick.
Oh, that explains why it was going by so quickly.
Right, and so in 1995, which would be, of course... today, because we took the Wayback Machine,
right.
Ward Cunningham.
Cunningham?
Cunningham, or Cunningham, if you prefer. I was pronouncing it the correct way.
Okay.
He came up with this idea. Now, he was he used his software developing skills and his web developing skills to create the first wiki, which was his way of creating an environment where a lot of people could share ideas and information in a collaborative way. Without having to worry about everyone logging into a separate thing and then one person taking all of those different pieces and then incorporating them together.
Right.
That wastes a lot of time. You know, you have to rely on one person to take all the different pieces and patch something together from them. So he created the first wiki, and then not that long afterward, the first public wiki called the Portland Pattern Repository shows up. And, now, Ward's Wiki is still active.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you can actually even visit it. It's Worldwide Wiki, isn't it?
Actually, no.
No? Okay.
Yeah, and I didn't write that down. So let me look for that real quick. Keep talking.
All right, I'll keep talking. So here's Ward's idea, is that he thinks that if he creates this sort of a web environment where anyone can come to the web environment and edit things or upload information... alter things that are already there. Maybe something is interesting, but it's not really pertinent to that particular discussion. It should have its own page. They could create the page for that. They could link everything to each other. And it takes off.
Yes.
Have you found it yet?
I'm still looking.
Good grief.
Oh, C2.
C2.
Yes.
Okay, that's
because it's from Cunningham and Cunningham Incorporated.
Ah, there. That makes sense.
C2.com.
So... This idea catches on and becomes a great way for people to collaborate and build information. And it could be the subject could be anything. There are a lot of companies that have wikis, including How Stuff Works. We have a wiki.
We do.
That we use to
and
keep
you
track
can't
of
see it.
Right. Yeah, you can't, but we can. That's the other thing, is that wikis are not necessarily public. You might have to sign in order to have access to a wiki.
They're a great tool for people to use on their intranet, where they could share information with one another and update the item, give access to everyday employees to let them update the database rather than having to, you know, have one person do that, which, you know, as we mentioned before, takes a lot of time.
Yeah, you might have things like company policies on there that might change over time, and or you might have, other things like employee contact lists, stuff like that, where it makes it easy for someone to come in and make a change. Let's say that... you've recently moved and you need to update your address. Well, instead of emailing one person who is the keeper of the list, it might be on a wiki where you can just go in, log in, and make a quick change. Well, tell you what, I guess we have to go back.
I kicked the plug out.
Well,
I forgot
it's also solar powered too. Yeah, and we're in Hawaii and there's a lot of sun. All right, let's get on in. Come on, let's go back to 2010.
Oh.
Man, it's tough coming back. At any rate,
you go on ahead and get out. I'll just clean up.
No, come
in here.
On, Paulette. Come on. We can't do that. All right. So we have this web collaboration tool that various companies and organizations start using in order to build communal information.
Yes.
Sectors, I guess you could say. It's kind of hard to put your finger on it. Like you said, it is kind of like a miniature World Wide Web.
Yeah, it's funny because it's. In a way, it's like a web page, because wikis generally, especially software used specifically to create a wiki, something like MediaWiki, which is the software used to build Wikipedia. It's free for you to use. You can install it on your own website to use. it has markup in it too. The way you create and, you know, add a link to copy on the page or add some information to the page is kind of similar to HTML. It's not exactly the same, but if you want to, add a link to copy, for example, you just, put a tag around where the copy is,
right,
and add the link in there and it's ready to go. And as a matter of fact, it's a little simpler, even than using HTML.
Right. And you can host files and things on a server and give links to it through the wiki. So,
but it's not exactly the same thing as the World Wide Web. And it's also not as, real time as something like, I don't know, Google Wave.
Right.
Where you have, a wave going on and people can make changes to it at the same time.
Yeah.
It doesn't update like that.
Though I would say that Google Wave definitely must have been the developers of Google Wave had to be inspired by wikis. It's pretty clear.
Yeah, it's wiki-like.
Yeah. It's definitely spawn of wiki.
Spawn of wiki.
But now let's move on. Now that we kind of talked about what a wiki is and that it's, a communally operated and maintained source of information of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Let's sort of segue into Wikipedia itself.
Yes.
Now, Wikipedia was the brainchild of a couple of different people, Jimmy Wales and Lawrence Sanger.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of rose up out of the failure of another enterprise.
Oh, yes.
That enterprise was called Newpedia.
Right.
Now, Newpedia was created back in 2000. And that was supposed to be an encyclopedia kind of resource, much like Wikipedia turned out to be. But the major difference was Newpedia was supposed to have expert-written and peer-reviewed articles in it.
Right.
So we're talking about stuff that's written by people who are recognized as experts in whatever field it happens to be,
mm-hmm.
and that everything was supposed to go through a pretty rigorous review process.
Uh-huh.
The problem with that is that it's slow.
Yes,
it takes a lot of time to generate that kind of content, to review it, to make sure that everything's accurate, and then to upload it.
That's not very wiki.
No. See, it's not wiki at all. It is, however, how certain sites like HowStuffWorks does things.
Yes.
We make sure that all of our articles are, we write our articles, we research, write them, and then edit them before they ever go up on the site.
And they are reviewed. For example, Jonathan gets, a certain amount of time to write an article, and then he gives it to me. Well, once I've had an opportunity to, make changes to that, basically replace all the words in there with my own.
Yes.
I almost made him do a spit take. If I had timed that just right.
You always take out the word poopy.
Once I've had an opportunity to edit the article, we send it to another editor who has an opportunity to go through and make sure that everything is okay, that nothing stands out as being grammatically incorrect
or having the wrong voice
or having the wrong voice or a flaw in logic or something.
Yeah.
So which does happen, never in Jonathan's articles, of course
not mine. I never use logic,
but we do that before it's even published, and then we have our publishing operations team take the article and actually put it on the website itself, and this does not happen in a span of 24 hours.
No, this process from the moment when someone gets an assignment to the moment when it goes up on the site can be usually it's right around 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, generally.
But it can be longer. I mean, we schedule things out well ahead of time in order to, because we take that into account. Well, when Newpedia launched, after 6 months, do you know how many articles they published?
Seven.
Too many. You're that number's too high.
Darn it. Going for the nice, lucky
two
number.
Articles two out articles. Of 6 months.
Wow.
6 months, because the process was very rigorous. So they started to think, this project's going to take a really long time to get off the ground. Maybe we should look at some alternatives in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they started to think about creating a resource where anyone could come in and write an article about a particular subject, and anyone else could come in and edit that article and contribute his or her own information to that article. And that became the basis of Wikipedia.
Well, that should be really cool, because there are all kinds of people who are not involved in projects like this who probably have some kind of expertise with the topics being explained, right? So theoretically, I could be writing an article about say, roller coasters. And a physicist might read that and say, oh, no, you got most of this right, but this one section on inertial velocity is wrong. Let me fix that for you.
Mm-hmm.
That should be a good thing, because that way it would be more accurate.
And in most cases, it is a good thing. The philosophy that this is based on is called the wisdom of the crowd.
Uh-huh.
So the idea being here that if you think of Wikipedia as a resource that any human being could access and contribute to, then eventually, as an article develops over time, you should get the best information about that particular subject that is out there.
Yes.
Because the people who are doing the research, the people who really know what they're talking about, can contribute. So over the long run, any particular article should be the best article that you could possibly find.
Mm-hmm.
There are some problems with this, though, during the short run. One is that you can have someone post incorrect information.
True.
Another,
or false.
Right. Another is you can have someone with a personal agenda come in and post information that presents a particular subject in a good or bad light.
I've actually had a Laura Eat Slugs problem with that, because I'd gone in and found information. Wait a minute. That wasn't actually pertinent to the article, right there in the middle.
Right. Laura, you're gross.
Yes. I literally have gone into an article, and in the middle of the copy was somebody essentially, not in the internet sense, tagging the article with some slur against someone else that had nothing to do with the article at all.
So vandalism is a problem.
Yes.
That would be considered a form of vandalism.
Factually inaccurate, or intentionally factually inaccurate.
Right. Now, because you have a community of users who are maintaining Wikipedia, most of the time these problems will be found pretty quickly, relatively quickly, and fixed. But if you have someone who's really determined to make a mess of things, that could be an issue for a while until they figure out a way of either banning that person or actually taking the article off from not removing it from Wikipedia, but removing people's ability to edit that article.
Yes.
Changes might get capped on articles. We've seen that happen, particularly with individuals who are still alive.
Yes.
Anyone who's still alive, that an article based on that person often will get frozen so that no one can contribute to it. So that way, if someone does have a personal grudge against that particular individual, they can't just go in there and completely ruin that person's reputation through various slurs and insults.
And these things are particularly active in cases in which, and at least ones I've seen, politicians. Like
right.
last year in the United, or not last year, but 2 years ago now. Golly, it's 2010 already. The United States presidential elections. Mm-hmm. Basically, anybody who was related to the candidates had to have their profiles frozen to keep people from going in and, saying all kinds of things about them. True and false, things that may not be pertinent to the actual entry.
Right.
Everybody involved. So, it wasn't just one side. It was pretty much every side.
But we've seen this even through things that aren't even involved in politics, like corporations.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Try to either to censor information that is harmful to that corporation, or to boost the corporation by including almost ad copy type stuff in their articles.
Yes, I'm sure that if you go to the entry for howstuffworks.com, you will find out that Tech Stuff is the best podcast offered by the site. I'm just saying, I don't know how that information would have gotten in there, if it is still there, but,
Was it really there?
No.
Oh, I was just wondering.
I'm being funny.
You never know.
I'm trying to be funny.
I was about to go back and look at the revision history. The revision history is actually one of the things about Wikipedia that is very useful. The revision history does keep track of all the changes that are made to an article. So if someone does go in and commit some sort of vandalism, or users notice something and they think it's a little questionable, they can flag the article. It's easy enough to go back through the revision history and see when that change was put in and who did it, and to change it back if necessary. Mm-hmm. So they have a lot of protections there in place. Now let's kind of get into the whole reason about why you should not use Wikipedia as a source in things like schoolwork, and why HowStuffWorks.com does not use Wikipedia.
Okay.
There are a couple of reasons. One is the malleable nature of Wikipedia that we've already mentioned.
Yes.
Is that, you know, one, it's impossible to determine on any particular day that the article you are reading is accurate and factual.
Mm-hmm.
Two, even if it is accurate and factual, that article may look totally different tomorrow.
Yes.
So if you cite an article, but then the cite disappears because someone's made an edit and has removed that part of the article, your source no longer exists.
Yep.
I mean, you could go through the revision history and try and find it, but that starts getting really kind of complicated.
Yes.
Three, it's not a primary source. And Wikipedia actually spells this out. If you go to Wikipedia and you read what Wikipedia is not,
mm-hmm.
one of the things Wikipedia is not is a primary source. Now, what that means is that Wikipedia is not a place to publish something for the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to do a scientific study, you would not publish the findings of that study in Wikipedia before you published it anywhere else. You would have to have it published in a peer-reviewed journal or some other format before you could reference it in Wikipedia.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to publish it if you put it in a peer-reviewed journal. They would never let you put the entire full text of the document back in Wikipedia.
But so. You could at least reference the findings.
You could.
Now, I think that alone is a reason why no one should use that in any kind of schoolwork or for HowStuffWorks.com. Just the fact that it's not a primary source.
Mm-hmm.
Usually whenever actually thinking back on it, I can't think of a single time I was assigned a paper where I was told that I could use anything other than primary sources.
Yes.
I could only use primary sources.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what that means is you can go to Wikipedia and look at the sources that Wikipedia used, the people who created that article, and track those back and see if those have merit.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases, you should find that they are coming from reputable sources. Once in a while, you might come across something that was written by, you know, some Yahoo, and then you may not want to use that as a primary source.
Yep.
But that's another good example for all students out there. I mean, Wikipedia is maybe just a kind of like a Cliff's Notes thing. I don't like the idea of using it other than just to go to the bottom and look at the source list.
Yeah, it's extremely useful as a source of primary sources.
Right.
And it can also I wouldn't use it as a source for something that I wrote for publication. It is useful, too, to give you an idea of a concept. I mean, if you're assigned to write a paper on something specific and you really don't have any understanding of it, you might use Wikipedia as an opportunity to learn a little bit about what to expect when you're doing research on the topic. You can kind of do a little quick and dirty, what is this thing about? And then once you have an idea of it, you might be able to go find some primary sources to give you authoritative information.
That's another good point. Another thing that Wikipedia in the Wikipedia is not folder mm-hmm. or article rather, it states that Wikipedia is not meant for people who are experts in whatever particular field that article addresses. So mm-hmm. in other words, if you're reading an article about electricity, you shouldn't have to be an electrician or someone with an advanced degree in physics
mm-hmm.
in order to understand it.
Nope.
So it is a good introductory element. It's a good way of looking for primary sources.
Oh yeah.
Not necessarily the best if you want to cite something in an academic paper or what we do here at How Stuff Works.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that my criticism of Wikipedia in the past has come across as Wikipedia is a bad thing. I don't really think Wikipedia is a bad thing. I just think it's not entirely reliable.
No. And I think it's not really Wikipedia, and it's not the organization behind Wikipedia. It's people who go in and mess with it, and people who go in to write articles that aren't, factually accurate.
Yeah, I've seen articles on Wikipedia that were just a joke.
Yeah.
And they were funny, but and of course the community did the right thing and eventually took the page down.
Sure.
Which I was sad about at the time, but at the same time I was like, well, if Wikipedia didn't take that page down, then the entire community becomes a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Not
mm-hmm.
just that page, because they say, well, look, we know this isn't real, but we're going to let it slide. That's they can't be taken seriously if they do that. So they made the right choice.
But I will add too, though, that the that other people are starting to take this kind of thinking and apply it to their own products and services. Like, for example, Britannica.com announced a while back now, I guess it's probably a couple of years now, that they were going to allow people to contribute to Britannica online. And you're going, wait a minute. I mean, this is like the ultimate peer-reviewed, high-end encyclopedia. Why would they do this? Well, they're not publishing changes before those changes are reviewed by an expert as well. So they have put in that extra layer of, well, hey, if you know something about this, please tell us. But before we publish this, we're going to check it out and make sure that it's accurate.
And Jimmy Wales has suggested that the opposite might end up being used over at Wikipedia, where they might try and get experts for certain kinds of articles to review them and make sure everything is accurate. So in other words, the two different encyclopedia are becoming more and more like each other.
Which is remarkable when you think about it.
Yep.
There are other things you can use wikis for. Besides just an information source, you know, people are using them to write novels. And they're, because they allow contributions. So you can have a collaborative novel. That's one of the more interesting, uses I've seen for wiki software.
My favorite wiki was introduced to me today.
Uh-oh. What is it?
Tracy Wilson of our beloved Tracy. She sent me a link to 10 word wiki.
Oh, yes.
Yes. It's a wiki that is sort of like an encyclopedia, but every single entry in the wiki is only 10 words long, and many of them are hilarious. So I do recommend the 10 word wiki if you want to kill an hour or two looking up. And of course, just like Wikipedia, it's a lot easier to find the pop culture reference stuff than anything else on there. That is one other thing I did want to add just really quickly. The other danger of having a community oriented encyclopedia is that you're going to get entries that, that if you were to judge the entry by the length, like how many words are in there, you would start to get the feeling that certain pop culture items are far more important to us than, say, the founding fathers of the United States of America. Mm-hmm. Then you do a search on the founding fathers, and you might find articles that are 2,000 to 4,000 words long. That's a pretty good long article. But then you look for Optimus Prime, and it has over 7,000 words, and you're thinking, wow, Optimus Prime must have been really important if the founding fathers of America only warrant 2,000 to 4,000 words.
Yep.
I mean, there is more than meets the eye, so I guess there's that.
I realize that it's not probably technically a wiki, but one of my favorites... well, there's the Uncyclopedia, which is quite entertaining. And I like, the Muppet Wiki over at wikia.com, which is a hosting site for many, many wikis. I don't know that it's technically a wiki, but everything2.com is very, very like a wiki if it's not technically considered one. I don't think it's actually using one of the wiki platforms, but, that site has many humorous, topics written in there. To say you would never use it as a resource. Maybe a resource for entertainment.
Right.
People are using the concept, of user generated content in this environment to for all kinds of really good things. And it's fast and easy to learn and, jump in and contribute to. So, it's a neat idea.
Yep. Well, Matt, I hope that answers your question. And Matt, students, don't use Wikipedia as a prime source. It's not meant for that.
Nope.
But that leads us to our second round of listener mail. This comes from Jamal from Delray Beach, Florida. And Jamal says, "Hey there, Chris and Jonathan. My name is Jamal, and I just recently discovered the Tech Stuff podcast and love it. My question is about computer processors and hard drives. Until recently, processors and drives were increasing in power and capacity at a near exponential rate. Hard drives are currently up to 2 terabytes in storage space and show no signs of slowing down. However, processors have stalled at around 3.8 gigahertz in processing power. To skirt this limitation, CPU manufacturers are introducing dual-core and quad-core processors. I believe there is a scientific law that explains how a hard drive or CPU would increase in storage capacity or processing power exponentially. My question is, how do scientists and or manufacturers go about increasing hard drive storage space and maintain the small size of the hardware, and why have computer processors reached a ceiling of 3.8 gigahertz? I hope my question makes sense. I only revised it 8 times. Love the show. And then he goes on to say that he remembered the scientific law as Moore's Law. So Moore's Law is not really a scientific law.
No, it's more of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And an observation. And the observation was that over a given amount of time, the number of transistors on a chip would double.
Mm-hmm.
And that given amount of time has changed over the years, between 12 months to 24 months, depending on when you're looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
In general, the way these processing microprocessor plants go is they find new ways to create smaller transistors. And then that's called a tick round. The tick is when you find a new way to create smaller transistors. And then the talk round would be ways of creating an architecture that maximizes the efficiency of those transistors. So tick, tock, tick, tock. And the Nehalem processor mm-hmm. that Intel came out with was a tick round. The next one would be a talk round, where they maximize the potential of that. We're getting to a limit just because we're getting to transistors that are so small that another major breakthrough is going to have to happen in order to make transistors even smaller if we want to fit them on the same size chips that we've been using in the past.
Mm-hmm.
The different cores are a way of kind of getting around that. That also requires that we go about a different way of programming.
And if I'm not mistaken, there's a certain point at which the materials inside the processor get so small that electrons begin to leak through them.
It uses electron tunneling, which is a quantum physics concept. Yeah. And you can get around that. Using different materials can limit electron tunneling. And it may end up being that the next step is to find something that is different from a transistor entirely, which sounds crazy. But then you think, well, before transistors, there were vacuum tubes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it's unprecedented. It just would require something that we don't have enough knowledge of right now to say this is going to be it.
Right.
So it may be that we hit a maybe not a plateau, but a much slower increase in power over the next few years. It doesn't necessarily mean Moore's Law will totally go away, because engineers are brilliant. They find neat ways around problems. That's what they do. So I wouldn't be surprised to see it stretch out a little longer. Although I also have predicted the end of Moore's Law, just like every other journalist over the last 20 years. Well, thanks a lot, Jamal. Hope that answers your question. If any of you have questions, write us. Our email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. Chris and I always like to hear your comments. And go over to the website. Read some stuff about wikis. We got an article written there by the site founder, Marshall Brain.
Yep.
So check that out, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit kia.com to learn more. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.